This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Let's talk about professional wrestling, because that's what this is. That's what this is all about.
That's what everything's all about.
So I'm pretty ticked off right now, actually.
Yeah?
At the WWE.
What's that?
Well, it's Saturday. I'm recording a little late this week because, you know, life happens, the holidays, whatnot, people shopping. And tonight, Greensboro, North Carolina, they're having a Starrcade live event.
Yeah, I saw tweets about that. I was actually going to text you about that earlier, but I was...
Yeah, and it's not a network special on the WWE Network. And damn sure ought to be. I mean, so far, the things I've heard, like, and I've seen, because WWE actually posted a video of this on their YouTube page, but... Arn Anderson got involved and delivered a spine buster, picture perfect spine buster, to Dolph Ziggler after Ziggler took a cheap shot on him. And, you know, it's like, that's pretty badass. And I think the show opened with Dustin Rhodes coming to the ring as to his old natural music. You know, they call him the naturalist can be from WCW. And talked about Starrcade and what it meant to the Rhodes family. I was hoping he was going to wrestle, but I guess he just... Haven't read all the results to the show yet. But it really seems like it's something they should have put on the network. Kind of like when they do Old School Raw, or they had the ECW One Night Only type of thing. I know they're using current WWE roster people, but seems to be pretty awesome. Seems to be pretty awesome.
You know what would have been cool is if they aired that instead of Survivor Series.
Well, I don't know about instead of Survivor Series, but I do think the Starrcade should be a pay-per-view. Like,
I think Survivor Series should have been a live show that they tweeted out, you know, the highlights of.
Well,
I actually enjoyed Survivor Series, especially compared to most of the pay-per-views for a while.
Yeah.
I thought it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it. I didn't regret watching it.
Oh, we had a good time watching it together.
Yeah.
I think we did.
That, that AJ Styles-Brock Lesnar match, I thought that was pretty good.
That was pretty awesome. That was indeed. Let's be chronologically correct, though. Let's just start with NXT TakeOver War Games. Did you end up watching the whole show yet?
I have not watched the actual War Games match yet, but we can talk about it. That's okay.
Well, all right. So just real quick, Lars Sullivan beat Cassius Ohno in a little over 5 minutes. I enjoyed this match. I like both of these guys. It was really hard-hitting, and it delivered what I thought it would deliver.
Yeah, I wasn't super impressed by the match, but... It's also kind of a function of where it was at on the card and stuff like that. It has an effect on it, but
right.
I don't know. Like I've seen Cassius Ohno elsewhere. There was a video you shared with me a couple of times of a match he had in Maine with
Zack Sabre Jr. Yeah,
exactly.
Limitless Wrestling Under Fire. I believe the event
was
that called.
One, which was in which I believe was in a location that you like. Practically couldn't stand up on the top rope if you wanted to do something, you know, that type of a show.
No, actually, no, that building was good. Or no, they used the club ring there, the pony ring.
They have a low ring or something like that.
Yes.
Something was a little bit weird, yeah.
No, it's called the pony ring instead of like the standard, I don't know, 3 feet or 4 feet height. I think it's 3 feet is the safe bet. Maybe 3.5 from the ring canvas to the floor. Pony ring's about foot and a half. And
I knew there was something that was a little bit
if they were to pull a full size ring in that building, then yes, you would have some off the top rope kind of difficulties, but with the pony ring it works just fine. So.
Yeah. So anyway, that match was pretty awesome. But Cassius Ohno in NXT, like, he has just not impressed me there ever.
Yep.
Very much. And I don't know. Part of it, I think, is his presentation. You know, it's like he's not in the best shape, so he wears a shirt.
Yep.
I don't know. I think it's just that he's wearing a shirt with short trunks. It just looks a little bit odd. It looks more like he's a guy who is intending to wrestle without a shirt on, but gets told to put a shirt on. You think he would kind of adjust his ring attire a little bit? Because it just, I don't know. Like, I think just a little bit of adjustment to his wardrobe would make him look a lot better. And I don't even think it would take a big adjustment or anything. Just a little tweak would improve his image a little bit.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I know what I've seen he can do, and we've seen snippets of it in this return to the WWE. A lot more, he has a lot more creative control or freedom to do things in the ring. But I don't know. I kind of liked him better on the indie scene. Next up was Aleister Black against Velveteen Dream. Velveteen Dream is a guy I haven't cared about at all since his debut. I just haven't given two shits about him whatsoever. And then the build leading to this match, I was enjoying him. And then this match here, this match is phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it was a great match. I really enjoyed this. And I haven't been watching much NXT for a little while, so I wasn't really up with the storylines or anything. But I've kind of poked in here and there or some. So I knew Velveteen Dream existed at least. But it's one of those things I saw him, just didn't care. Didn't care about his character. So I didn't know anything else other than he was there.
I hear you there.
This match made me interested in him.
Yep.
I thought he did really well. I thought the match was a really good match. It made me much more interested in the character, which, especially for it being a character that is so obviously influenced by certain past characters, even with still really seeing the influences undiluted.
Yep.
It still just didn't feel like he was trying to be like those other guys. You know what I mean? Like, he has big Rick Rude influences, for example, but it's not like, it didn't feel like he was just out there trying to do his Rick Rude impersonation in the ring.
Right.
You can still really strongly see the influences, which over time he'll continue to develop his own character, and those influences will settle down more to, you know, nuances of who he is rather than being the bulk of the flavor. But this was a good match. I mean, Aleister Black, too. It's not like I've seen a ton of stuff from him yet. So, this, I thought, put him in a place where he was more interesting, too.
For me on this, I love the story that the two told in the match. You know, the one where Velveteen wanted Black just to say his name. And just how the match kind of went back and forth, and some unexpected offense from Dream, and I don't know. I liked the finish. I liked how Aleister Black said his name at the end of it. I mean, I don't know. I liked everything they did with the match. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'd love to see a rematch between the two, actually. I think that'd be good. Fatal 4-Way Women's Match for the vacant title. Ember Moon against Kairi Sane, Nikki Cross, and Peyton Royce. I got to be honest, I wasn't overly thrilled with this match.
I wasn't either. I wasn't expecting a lot. I mean, all the names that I really cared about in the NXT women's division have all moved up. Yeah. So, I mean, somebody's got to fill the void. You know, I mean, it did get a little old watching, the next batch of people not be able to beat Asuka. I enjoyed watching Asuka beat people continually, but, it's no. It was the kind of thing where it's if they had Asuka lose, it would have just been well, fuck this. This is stupid, you know?
Yep.
So there was no win there. It's I didn't really feel threatened that Asuka was going to lose the title. And, because of that, it dulled down the interest a little bit. But if I did feel threatened, if they actually had to lose, I would have just been well, this is dumb. They had to crown somebody else as champion. And it was what it was.
I don't care for Ember Moon as champion, personally. don't know. I just don't care for her as champion, or having her having the title. When she was on the Indies as Athena, I enjoyed her matches there, but I've yet to see a match of hers that like. I have yet to see a match of hers other than with Asuka that's blown me away or made me go, wow, this is really good. Or it's made me go, wow, this is really just, huh. You know, but
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, now, I mean, now they'll get their chance. So.
Yep, we'll see what happens.
I mean, honestly, like, anytime you put more than two competitors in a match, it has an effect on the quality of the competition, in my opinion.
Well, it depends.
So you put more, there can be good matches with multiple, you know, like more than two possible winners. But, like, I don't know. All the ones that I've seen, it takes some, like, very elite competitors to make them good. Most of the time, they just turn into that, you know, who's going to be the one to get the cheap shot at the end and win the person that just got hit by somebody else's finisher. That's most of the time what happens.
But. Right.
So, I mean, going into this match, you never knew who was going to win because you knew it probably wasn't going to be the person that you thought was going to win.
Right.
You know, based on the action in the ring. But, I mean, the only one I didn't want to win was Peyton Royce. I just do not give a shit there.
Oh, see, I would have been fine with her winning. In fact, I think she would have been... If they're just going to have the title... If they're just going to have Ember drop the title to Kairi Sane here, get the next takeover, then putting the title on Peyton would have been better. For me, but whatever. Andre and Cien Almas with Zelina Vega defeated Drew McIntyre for the NXT Championship. Very surprised to see Almas win the title over McIntyre. I guess he was injured before the match. I thought the match was okay. Again, wasn't blown away by it. But I guess we'll see what happens next. Who his challenger is going to be coming into it.
The one thing I will say about him winning the match, winning the championship, because I was surprised too, but it makes you feel a little bit more like it, like anybody could win it, you know? I mean,
right.
We go through, especially, I don't know, we're fans where we sit back and look at what's in front of us and we can judge what's going to happen so much. And even if we may not be sure who they're going to have win the title, like we can look at a match and be like, yep, there's no way that guy's winning it. And then we can watch other matches and say, okay, well that, you know, these are the reasons why it may go this way or that way, but there's a real chance this person wins it. Yeah. And this is one of those where, like, I didn't expect him to have, like, why the hell would they put the title on him? Nothing really made me think that, you know? But it's nice to see those kind of upsets sometimes. I was actually listening to an old episode of The Pritchard Show today. I haven't listened in quite a while. So my iTunes had stopped downloading, so I had, I don't know, months of episodes that weren't downloaded yet. So I went back to the first one that was downloaded. It was the Razor Ramon episode. And they talked about when the 1-2-3 kid got the upset on him. And I remember seeing that, and it was shocking, and it was great. I was a kid then, too. So, like, as a kid, seeing the good guy who had no chance to win beat the bad guy, It was great, and like you don't get those moments of like, whoa, like I didn't expect that to happen. You don't get that much anymore. So
yeah, no.
even though I don't care that much about Almas still. It's kind of nice to know that like there are those like anything can happen moments in there still.
Yep. No, I understand what you're saying. I just think about Jinder Mahal and how well that didn't work. But
Jinder Mahal was a great champion.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody could beat him. I mean, he beat so many great people.
Yeah, and a broken pelvis is a great injury. Anyways.
He broke his pelvis?
No. War Games match. Adam Cole won the match for his team. So you would think Adam Cole would be the next logical number one contender. But Adam Cole's a heel. Almas is a heel. So... kind of interested to see if they're going to go with Cole or if they're going to hold off or what they're going to go for with Almas next, who it is that's going to be his first challenger. So But anyways, the War Games match itself, I was a little upset when I found out they were going to have a roof on the cage. It's like, ah, you're giving us the two rings, you're giving us the War Games entrance, you know, the stagnated entrance of the guys. It's a little different, but we're still getting that. You know, we're getting the double cage, but we're not getting the roof. And thinking back, the old War Games games with the roof on the cage and everything, you know, it was all about blood and guts and guys just beating the piss out of each other. And yeah, we can see some guys getting beat up in this, but we're not going to see the blood. And so, and I guess, you know, wrestling has changed from 30 years ago till now, obviously, and doing some, you know, dynamic and dramatic stuff off the top of the rope, or I'm sorry, off the top rope or off the top of the cage, whatever, is more expected nowadays than it was back in the mid-80s and all. I like the fact they had the rule that if you try to get out of the cage or climb out of the cage or fall to the floor, that you forfeit the, you know, the match for your team. And then that being said, I thought, you know, for nine guys being involved in one match, I thought they did it brilliantly. Nothing was picture perfect. There was some, you know, botched spots here and there, but for the most part, with that many people, and the fact that they went 37 minutes, 36 and a half minutes, I mean, I don't know. I love that. You really need to check it out, Paul. It is a great match.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go back and watch it. Yeah. I even intended to watch it that night, and I fell straight to hell to sleep. Yeah. But not because of the match, because I'd been up since 4 in the morning.
But yeah, that can happen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it. It's always kind of nice to get the kind of reminiscent things, you know, especially, I don't know, it's fun to see some of those old gimmicks that we haven't seen in a long time, you know, that you have those fond memories of, especially when they're actually executed well. So, you know, getting the feedback I got on the match, I knew I was going to want to go back and watch it. So I'll get to that soon. I was just thinking, what was the match that WCW had where not only did they have a cage, but there was multiple levels to the cage?
Well, okay, it depends. I mean, the Triple Tower of Doom was what it was originally called back in the day, and then WCW brought it back after the Ready to Rumble movie where they had that finish as, you know, the three-level steel cage. So it's called the Triple Tower of Doom.
That was just a mess.
Oh yeah.
It makes a cage around two rings.
Yeah, those are pretty convoluted. Yeah. So, the only other two matches they had that night of TakeOver were taped for the TV that week, and that was Ruby Riott defeating Sonya Deville in a Who Cares match, and then Pete Dunne retaining the UK Championship against Johnny Gargano, which I was truly disappointed with how much time they gave this match, because, you know, they gave it 10 minutes of TV time, and these two guys, like, I didn't dislike the match. It didn't live up to my personal hype of what I thought the match was going to be when I heard it was announced and, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's worth watching if you haven't. All in all, I thought NXT TakeOver was a good show. Top to bottom, you know, nothing was perfect, but man, the Aleister Black against Velveteen Dream and the actual War Games match itself, pretty awesome matches.
Yeah, there were some good ones. It's, you know, looking back to, I mean, I guess when I first really got into NXT was, I think it was the first TakeOver.
Yeah.
Was it Our Evolution?
Yep.
That was the first one, right?
I believe so, yes.
I think that's when I got into it, because you guys, of course, were all clamoring about it, so I watched it. And it's, I don't know, it's funny comparing what we get now to then, and just, it's amazing how quickly things can change, because at that point, NXT was getting all of these names that were big from other promotions, and you know, like just getting all these guys in there at the same time. Like NXT was just flooded with these guys. And now it just, like, that whole batch has been called up from, like, all of the, you know, the female competitors, to, you know, the Sami Zayn and the Kevin Owens and, just all these different guys. And then you kind of got the bats trickling in, like, you know, through, like, Shinsuke Nakamura. Bobby Roode was, like, they're all up now. Bobby Roode, I didn't think was really in NXT that long either, you know.
He worked several months of house shows before he actually debuted on TV. Even doing international events, so.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was weird, because, like, some of his debut his debut NXT match was in the UK against Shinsuke Nakamura in a singles match, and it wasn't for like 9 or 10 months that we actually got to see the match, you know, on TV, if you will. So, you know, it wasn't even that match, obviously, you know, but still, it was. But I know what you're saying. You know, I think NXT has a good wave of male wrestlers down there. On the women's side of things. Could be better, I guess, but, you know, they got to build them all, see where they go, but...
Exactly, I mean, the badge that they had, you know, I mean, they... I don't know, like, it almost feels like it's luck to get that many people of that level of talent. I mean, I look at Charlotte, too, like, I mean, watching her, like, from back to NXT, like, she was good, but, like, she also... There was a lot of, like, you could see there was a lot of room for improvement.
Yep.
And God, is she improved. Like, she went from being the one that, like, she got all the hype, so, like, I don't know, kind of bugged me a little bit because there was just all this hype around her. And I was like, she's like, screwing shit up more than like, the other batch of those girls. She was not the strongest competitor out of that group. And now she definitely is at least on par with any of the top competitors. So she's really impressed me. Her development has just been amazing.
She's killing it.
Yeah, she really is.
She's only been wrestling for a few years.
I know. It's impressive. You know, that's really impressive to see how she's developed.
She's technically a product of the Performance Center.
Yeah.
You know, just like there's another girl down there, Bianca Belair. She's a product of the Performance Center, you know, completely. And I'm enjoying what we're seeing of her. Like, I'm excited to see her, you know, improve and expand and do better and everything. And, you know, to see where she's going to go. I mean, now that they've opened up some spots on the NXT roster there with the six call-ups they had, or the five call-ups they had between Raw and SmackDown, I mean, yeah, there's room now for some ladies to step out down there in NXT. I'll say this. I don't care about Sonya Deville at all. Paige, I thought, looked pretty rough. And I can't think of the other girl that they got there up there, Team Amber something. I'm just brain cramping right now. I'm a little tired. And then on the SmackDown side of things, I'm a big fan of Sarah Logan. I love Crazy Mary Dobson, but I do like Sarah Logan. Ruby Riott, Holly Lovelace, I like her, but I wasn't... I don't know. And then... Liv Morgan, I don't care about it whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. So we'll see what happens. But, 10 matches on the card, 3 dark matches, 7 pay-per-view matches here at the Survivor Series for a very, very, very long show.
Yeah.
Pre-show matches... Don't really care about Elias against Matt Hardy or Enzo against Kalisto. I'm don't. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn defeating Breezango. I enjoyed that match. I enjoyed the comedy. I enjoyed the seriousness of the different spots. I really enjoyed that match. Thought it was great.
Yeah, I like to see them pairing Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn together. Mm-hmm. When they move. Called Sami Zayn up, they just kind of, he had that initial momentum just because he was called up, but
didn't
last. After that, it's like they didn't really know what to do with him. It just really felt like they just didn't know what to do with him because he wasn't strong enough of a character. Like, I don't know, his character is pretty easy, just like a very passive character, you know? And that kind of... I guess, like, in NXT, you could kind of push his character, just like how he presents himself, against the top guys, because it's just like NXT is different, you know?
Right.
But when you move him up, it's like that kind of passiveness didn't work. So this shakeup for his character was really good. And, I mean, Kevin Owens, he's loud. He gets attention for himself. So I think like putting them together was just it was a good way to shake both of them up.
Yeah, and I think they have great chemistry together. So
yeah, it's almost like they've known each other for a long time or something.
They have. So the opening match on the pay-per-view was the Shield against the New Day. It went 21 minutes. I thought that was way too long. The match got draggy for me, and I started losing interest in it because it was
too long. Horribly too long.
Yeah.
Horribly too long.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about that match and every other match on the card is there's been a lot of times in the past where we've watched matches and just, like, the execution of everything in the match was just shit.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it didn't even feel like it didn't even feel like they were trying to go out there and put on a match. Like, it just was
right.
Bad.
They're going through the motions.
Yeah, like, you know, what was it? Was it last year's Survivor Series or was it the year before that it ended up being Roman Reigns against one of those guys for the championship at the end of the tournament? It was a couple years ago.
It was Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, and that was the laziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, not only that match, but the
previous
match
ones
that you had. Like all those matches were just bad.
Yep.
This match, like, it may not have been the most exciting match the whole time, most of the time, but it was at least solidly executed the whole time.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. I don't know.
That's one of the biggest things about this whole show. Yeah, it dragged. Definitely dragged. I'm not arguing with the fact that, like, I was definitely bored out of my mind for half of it. Just wanted the damn thing to end, and it wouldn't. Just fucking wouldn't end. Stop it. Goddamn it.
No, I kind of felt the same way. I just felt the match dragged way too long, and I was just looking for the finish.
Yeah. They should have finished it earlier than they did.
Yeah.
I get, like, it's kind of a tough spot where you have two. How often do you have, like, two really strong three-man tag teams, you know?
You don't.
It's not that often. So, like, they're both really strong three-man tag teams. They both got a lot of feathers in their caps, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't want to make one, like, predominantly better than the other one.
Yeah.
So you give a lot of back and forth. And, that match, if you look at the story of the match, either team legitimately could have won the match at many points throughout. So when one team ends up winning and the other one loses, it's like, well, if they did the match again, it probably would have gone the other way, you know? So it wasn't like, well, the Shield is far and away better than New Day or vice versa. But for the sake of making a match not be boring for the last, like, 15 minutes, they should have just ended it fucking sooner.
Yeah, agreed. 5-on-5 Survivor Series women's match, Team Raw against Team SmackDown, and they went 18 and a half minutes or so. I didn't dislike this match, but I wasn't overly excited about it either. While watching it, seeing Nia Jax and Tamina square off, I actually enjoyed that thoroughly.
Yeah, I'll say that was the unexpected highlight of the match, and possibly the most unexpected highlight of the evening.
Yep. And Asuka, beating up everybody and being the sole survivor and everything like that made sense to me.
Yeah, I like how they did it. That's exactly what I wanted out of the match. Yeah. I mean, I didn't care of any, but I mean, there are quite a few other competitors in the match that I liked. I mean, I like Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
And of course, like, even though they presented her as, like, the leader of the team, she was the first eliminated because they can't let her do anything good. Sasha Banks, Bayley was in it. Like, they're all good. Like, they're all, some of my favorites. There were some people in the match that I couldn't care less about, that's for sure. But
yep, same here.
It got down to Asuka and Natalya and Tamina, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the thing that I liked best about that, even though Natalya and Tamina may not be, two of my favorite competitors at this point, like, Natalya, I used to root for her because she's, from the Hart family.
Right.
But now it's just like, ugh, just no, just not anymore. But the thing is those two, and I mean, Tamina looked good in the match too.
Yeah.
I mean, we already mentioned the other moment. Those two look like they could beat the shit out of somebody.
Yeah.
Like they can compete in the ring and look that way. So they looked like they could beat the shit out of Asuka. They're both bigger than Asuka. You know what I mean? So
it was believable if you saw the two of them ganging up on her that there's a chance that they might have gotten her eliminated either by count out or pinfall or whatever. I'd probably say more count out than anything.
Especially with it being 2-on-1, like they just legitimately look like
yeah, that's what I mean because of the 2-on because of the 2-on-1 aspect of it. But I was happy with the finish, and I assumed Asuka was going to look strong.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't surprising at all, really.
Yeah, and just like we were both worried that they were going to bring Asuka up and then, you know, demolish what they had built with her, because for some reason they seem to like to do that. Fucking Vince. There's that little bit of concern in anything like this, that they're just going to, just pass over what they've spent so much time building up.
Yeah.
So it was good to see. I liked how they did it, and it was good to see that they did do that, not just have her quietly get a little. Because they could have done. I mean, you look at past Survivor Series matches. As much as anybody can complain about the product that we get nowadays, we had talked before about that Survivor Series. What Survivor Series was it? The one that they ended up just disqualifying everybody but Ric Flair for no fucking reason.
Survivor Series 1991.
Yeah.
Everyone on both teams except Flair was either counted out or disqualified or thrown out or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
Eliminate every. It's like they do stupid stuff all the time. Oh, so, yeah. Like, once again, like, this match was solid. It was what you expected. There wasn't, like, it wasn't poorly performed. There wasn't just absolutely illogical things happening.
Right,
yeah,
right.
There were some quick eliminations, but you always get that in a Survivor Series, you know? You'll get a guy who's, you know, normally would withstand at least one finisher before you beat them and take a second one, get beat by a roll-up, you know, and crap like that. So it happens.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying. Or sometimes I remember one in particular that was like the referee was doing a fast count. I think it was when they had a Survivor Series match on the pre-show once, back, 97, 98, something that time frame. And like a guy's shoulders weren't even down on the mat and the referee counted three, like he'd kind of rolled through inadvertently. And I started thinking like, his shoulders aren't even down. But, oh, referee counted three. Okay. But yeah. United States champion Baron Corbin defeated Intercontinental champion Miz. I don't care. I just don't. Do you have a care or a thought about it?
I thought it was okay. I mean, you know, once again, it wasn't really a match that I was looking forward to. The Miz, he's a good performer, yada yada yada. Like I'm never very interested in what he does. Oh. But he does do his job well, that usually he makes me want to see him get beat.
Yeah, well, he did get beat. He got beat this past Monday by Roman Reigns and lost the title.
Ah, didn't know that.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, that's a time that I would rather he fucking won. So, Same good here. Job, man.
Yeah, good job.
But yeah, like, I think one of the problems with this match is it was heel versus heel.
Yeah.
But they were... Yeah,
they were cheering Miz. Because it was heel versus heel, but with Corbin's actions, you know, calling out Miz's wife, insulting her cat, calling at her. I mean, the people automatically, not, but for the most part, will push for, you know, the good him, you know, the Miz being the good guy because his wife's pregnant and this other guy's being mean to her. And
yeah, and I think that it made Corbin look more heelish, which is not a bad thing. But
nope. It
was a match that felt a little like we're forcing a match because of this theme that we want to have. But, you know, once again, one of the things I liked about the Survivor Series, honestly, is that it did more of, like, making up reasons for matches. You look at old pay-per-views, and there's all kinds of matches that there's no story behind. You know? I mean, there are matches that are just matches.
Right.
Like, nothing behind it, you know? And I, like, that's one of the things I miss about wrestling. Like, wrestling is, you know, it's scripted, whatever, but like it used to be presented as just like legitimate competition.
So that's the what point I like of about the match NXT. Is
just having a match, you know?
Right. See, that's what I like about NXT is because they only have the 1 hour a week, and they only have, so they can only dedicate time to so many people, so they have to come up with different ways, like having them tell storylines via matches or brief backstage promos or whatever, but they're not doing the 15-minute in-ring intro stuff or anything like that, you know, which is a nice alternative. And New Japan Pro Wrestling, I mean, yeah, they do press conferences and this and that and everything like that, but I mean, like, they tell their stories in the ring, and they're focused on their wrestling and wrestling matches, which is, you know, no complaints here, because I love wrestling and wrestling matches.
Yeah, so anyways, whatever, it was a match that was a match, because they needed to have a match, and it was those two guys because they were at that level of the card.
Because
so
they were the
that
champions.
Was the most exciting thing, but whatever. Once again, it was not poorly executed, even if it wasn't the most exciting match. So
right. SmackDown Tag Team Champs The Usos against Raw Tag Team Champs Cesaro and Sheamus. I think I dozed off during this match. That's how awesome it was.
You took a pretty good nap.
Yeah, I mean, like, I did go back and rewatch it. And I almost fell asleep again. I mean, yeah, that match happened.
The best thing you can say about that match is, once again, it actually wasn't sloppy and shitty.
Yep.
It just was boring.
So, yeah. SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair against Raw Women's Champion Alexa Bliss. I was surprised how much offense that Bliss had in on this, but I really enjoyed this match.
Yeah, that match was good. I was hoping Alexa would win because, as the logic, which totally panned out, that's hilarious. I have my Kindle here and I said Alexa, so it's listening to me now.
That's why you can't say that stuff out loud when you get the old Amazon sticking around.
That's hilarious. But anyways, that was entertaining. That was as entertaining as half the matches on that show. It was a good match, and
yeah, it was a good match. I was just surprised to see Alexa get so much offense in.
Yeah, with
dominated.
She's not the biggest person. She's not, like, you just look at her, she's not the most fearsome, but she makes you believe it when she takes it to people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yes, she does. Universal Champion Brock Lesnar against WWE Champion AJ Styles. They went 15 and a half minutes, and Lesnar got the win. Here was my biggest problem with this match. When this match started, I believe they said that SmackDown was up 3-2, if you were counting wins on the matches on the tally. And it's just like, it annoyed me, because then you knew straight away AJ Styles was losing.
Yeah.
So they could then tie it up, and that just kind of pissed me off, yeah.
No, they shouldn't have done that. That's a dumb thing to do. They do that to add another dynamic of competition about it. I mean, that's kind of the flaw with the whole theme of this Survivor Series, where it was Raw versus SmackDown. At some point, like, it makes it very, very obvious what you're doing, because you're going to set it up for the last match to be the big final showdown.
Right.
So, yeah, but I think that this match was... because I think while we were watching it, certain other members of this podcast were not feeling it. But I thought this match was great. I thought it was pretty much the best thing you could hope it would be. I mean,
no, I really enjoyed the match. I thought it was good. Brock Lesnar was dominant early. I think their biggest concern was it didn't appear that he was suplexing him safely. But Lesnar was dominating early, and then, you know, AJ's coming back, being the underdog, fighting from underneath, you know, chipping away at him, and then it's like, holy crap, AJ's going to win, you know, and I don't know. I just enjoyed it. I'd love to see them go at it again.
Yeah, especially without some shit that makes you know who's going to win.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest thing, is this match still made Brock look like a beast, but it made AJ look... pretty
oh, made
look
him look like
something you can
bucks.
Beat a beast. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, made him look like $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, whatever sounds like a lot of money to you.
Yeah, it's the saying is $1,000,000. The saying it made him look like $1,000 is kind of an insult.
Fine, made him look.
Made
super
him look
good.
Like $1,350. That's enough for a movie ticket.
Only if you're going to a matinee. At least around here. So the main event match is the 5-on-5 match, and I'll say this: I didn't care for the ending of the match, but there was a lot of great moments in the match that I really, really enjoyed. Like seeing Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor square off. Like seeing Shinsuke Nakamura and Triple H square off. I didn't realize how bad I wanted to see Bobby Roode and Triple H wrestle against each other in the ring until they were trading spine busters with each other. But so there were some good moments in the match that I really enjoyed. But I don't know if I didn't care for the ending of the match, you know, where Kurt Angle's got Shane where he wants him, and Triple H comes in and pedigrees Angle, so that way Shane, and then puts Shane on top of him to pin him, so that way Triple H can have the satisfaction of saying that he eliminated Shane instead of Kurt Angle, so...
The only plus I could say about the end is at least it was unexpected. When they whittled it down to Shane, you know that there's no way Shane's gonna win at that point.
Right.
I mean, going against two Hall of Famers, one of which is
Triple H, Kurt Angle, and Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you wouldn't think that if it was just Shane against Braun without all the other stuff going on, you wouldn't think that he'd have a chance of winning.
Right.
I don't know. Like, the way they got down to the end...
It took me out of it.
It really took you out of it.
Yeah.
So the only positive I could say is at least it was a twist.
Well...
But it was a twist for twist's sake and to give Triple H the limelight.
Oh, another good part in the match is when Shane McMahon tried to jump Braun Strowman from behind at the very beginning, and Braun throws him across the ring. And then you look back and Triple H is laughing at him. Just Triple H's reaction, how he was laughing at Shane. That I don't know. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
They had some real good moments like that with the reaction of the guys that were outside of the ring. You know.
Oh, they kept showing Finn Balor like when Bobby Roode was doing his glorious thing, getting one. Finn Balor's like, "Don't you do it? Don't you do it?" Like, I thought that was hilarious. Like, the camera kept catching Balor, and he was showing a very humorous side of him that we haven't seen yet, but he was great with his facial expressions and his comments and, you know, really enunciating so you could read his lips and everything. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I think the details like that really showed the quality of performers that, you know, if you take it, like, take everybody out that is, you know, the longtime WWE guys, and then, you know, also ignore Braun Strowman, we got positive things to say about him too, but all the guys that have had careers, but not in WWE, like, they all really showed that they are top notch performers, not just wrestlers, not just characters,
right?
But like, just all around, like, being able to add all those details in, and that's why, like, that's why NXT was great for so long, is all those guys came up for NXT, and I've watched Bobby Roode matches from TNA, like, just random stuff, because I wasn't like any kind of avid TNA watcher at any time, so it's like I've got random cheap DVDs and been able to see old matches of him or AJ Styles too, so like, just talking about both of those guys, like, I've enjoyed what they've done at this point in their career more than anything I've seen.
Yep,
their characters are fucking great. They nail it, and just they're so dynamic. I mean, and both of their entrances, I love both of their entrances.
Same here.
It's partially the music, but it's also like how they...
It's the presentation. It's the whole, whole everything. Yep.
Yeah, and it's not like, some entrances are great because of the effects put into it.
Yep.
You could have their entrance with no effects, and they're still going to make it more special than most things.
Yep.
So,
I agree with that.
So many of those guys, seeing them being able to compete with guys from the WWE system, just like you said, all of them going against Triple H and not wanting to see it just because you want to see Triple H get beat by, by the guys from outside of the WWE.
Yeah.
But like, wanting to actually see them compete, because you can see just from those brief moments in the ring that they can make their differences mesh.
Yep.
And get a great performance. Like, just so many aspects of it gave so much potential.
Absolutely.
The downsides of the match are that you still knocked out everybody interesting first.
Right, like Shinsuke going first surprised me.
I mean, at least Rob Roode going second
surprised me.
Yeah, Finn lasted a little bit longer, but you know, so I mean, it got to the point where it's like, oh well, they could take Shin to the end, or Finn to the end of this match, but they didn't.
Yep.
So they got everybody out of the way. That was interesting like that. And then once they took John Cena out, it was like, okay, come on, this is going to be a foregone conclusion,
right?
And then they took Orton out, and it was like, okay, now this is just going to be done. But you know, back to Braun Strowman, like he's been like way exceeding my expectations. Performance-wise, like, I mean, he's a giant guy, so he's fierce and intimidating from that way, but how many giant guys have we seen that it doesn't take long, and just like, you know, that the other podcast says, then the bell ring, you know?
Yep. No, and you're absolutely right. There's a lot of big guys out there that they bring them in, and they ain't shit in the ring. And Strowman's not one of them. Like, I'm actually genuinely surprised. You know, once he started having matches and wasn't just being muscle at ringside, I was genuinely surprised how well he did.
Yeah, he's been pretty impressive. Yeah. That's pretty much the only positive you can take out of the end is it put Braun over.
Braun got put over huge. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it got to the end, and I don't know, like if it got to the end and it transpired the same way, but then when Braun went to attack Triple H, he kicked him in the nuts and gave him the pedigree, which is some shit that you wouldn't be surprised to see from Triple H.
It wouldn't shock me, but boy, that pissed me off.
Yeah, see, if it ended that way, then you'd be like, okay, this was all just a bunch of bullshit at the end. But with it ending with him going over, at least they put somebody over who, you know, can go somewhere with it.
Right.
Yeah. Triple H doesn't need that.
Somebody got elevated.
Yeah. Poor Kurt Angle, though, man. It was tough watching him wrestle.
It's kind of painful watching him get in the ring, you know, how his legs kind of never seem to be straight. He's kind of constantly hunched.
It is amazing to see the quality of performance that he's able to put in while seeing, like, I didn't notice it as much until you pointed it out, but he can't turn his freaking head. Like,
he can't turn his head.
And then you watch him, like, watching him take the bumps that he was taking, knowing that if you can't move your neck, like, you know, everybody listen, have you ever just had a stiff neck?
Yeah,
and
right?
Something causes you to move your neck when, you know, like, I don't know, like you stumble or something.
Right.
You have a really stiff neck, and then you trip a little bit, you stumble, so you actually turn your head a little bit, and it's excruciating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it
is. Dude, look at that poor guy out there. So, yeah, I don't know. Like,
he's in rough shape. He's painful to watch.
Yeah, the match that he had with the two members of the Shield at the last pay-per-view, like he put on a good performance there, and I appreciate some of the things that they did even more because they protected him, but they kept it entertaining and interesting too. Like there was the when they all ran off the ropes and two of them dove out of the ring and he just like stops and like climbs through the ropes.
Yeah,
I thought that was an awesome moment in that match. Because it's like, yep, he's not diving out.
No, that was funny. I did enjoy that myself, yeah. So, but I guess all in all, I'd say Survivor Series, it wasn't the best pay-per-view of the year, far from the worst pay-per-view of the year, and there was definitely enough great moments that really made me enjoy the show.
Yeah, there were moments that were awesome, and honestly, there wasn't a single match that was just poorly performed. Even if some of the matches were a little boring, at least they were executed well.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, it was solid and I enjoyed it. And really, like, anytime I watch one of these events, like, that's what I'm looking for, is to go into it and enjoy it. I don't want to go into it and, you know, find enough reasons to not enjoy it because I want to be critical and pick it apart, you know? So,
yeah, no, there's plenty of...
Enjoy it. But, you know, there was a period of the year where, I mean, I was just getting to the point where, like, I used to be excited and look forward to every pay-per-view event that they had.
Yep.
And after a run of a few of them, I didn't care anymore. Like, I was like, well, maybe I'll have it on and maybe I'll pay attention. But it's unlikely that both those things will happen at the same time. So it was nice to get one that even if it wasn't great, at least seemed like everybody gave a fuck that they were there.
Exactly, yeah. So I can agree with that sentiment. So my buddy Brandon's at Russell Cade this weekend down in North Carolina. If you do yourself a favor, just Google Russell Cade. It's an unbelievable large fan convention with wrestling matches, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then, you know, the convention halls and meeting all the wrestlers that are there. I mean, it looks like a crazy great time. It reminds me of going to NWA Legends Fan Fest back in 2009. So, yeah, that's all. It looks awesome. I'm kind of jealous. Kind of jealous he's there because, you know, it's a big wrestling weekend and that just... That's not a bad thing ever in life. So, anyhow. Anything else you want to talk about or address, Paul?
This is, you know, Survivor Series. It's the Thanksgiving tradition. I was thinking about Survivor Series and... you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Hello?
I haven't gone anywhere.
Hello, hello.
It's all you, Paul. I can hear you. You're saying hello, hello.
You there?
I'm here, Paul. You just can't hear me. And so I guess I'll just say, hey, thanks for listening this week. I'm on the Twitter at SuperstarML. Paul's at Who's Paul. The show is at 1000 Holds Pod. Facebook's podcast of 1000 Holds. And, if we're done, then thanks. Skype audio. It's always amazing.